In a tiny Victorian town, the football club isn't just a weekend ritual.
It's country footy, you get there really early, you leave late.
But then, one day, something happens.
In the back of a caravan, just over the road from this footy club.
Once I realised what was going to happen, it was not good.
And suddenly, everyone must pick a side.
I just felt angry. Those folks were meant to be my mates.
Hometown Boys, a new series by Background Briefing. Listen now on the ABC Listen app.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
If you search the name Andrew Tate online, you'll see phrases like the king of toxic masculinity, self-proclaimed misogynist, and human trafficking charges. But none of these phrases are what prompted Andrew Tate and his brother to launch defamation action against an Adelaide YouTuber. Welcome to The Case Of. I'm Claire Rawlinson, standing in for Stephen Stockwell, and today we're looking at what happened when one of the world's most powerful influencers sued one of his most fearless critics, an Adelaide YouTuber who goes by the handle Gadget.
Andrew Tate is suing me.
Under the handle Gadget, Nathan Pope mostly posts about Andrew and Tristan Tate, self-described misogynists who have massive followings online.
What I think is they don't like us contradicting them.
The Tate brothers are suing 15 social media users, advocates and lawyers in a Florida court.
If you haven't heard of Andrew Tate, he's an influencer who teaches young men and boys how to embody his version of masculinity. He has 11 million followers on X, but he's been removed from other major social platforms for breaching their standards, essentially for hate speech. His estimated wealth is around 700 million. Joining me for today's episode to break down the recent defamation action that the Tate brothers have launched is South Australian ABC reporter George Yankovic. Hi, George.
Hi, Claire.
George, we'll get to the Tate brothers lawsuit in a moment, but first, how did this story first come on your radar?
So it came on my radar in mid-2024 when I was working at the Adelaide Advertiser newspaper here in South Australia. I had ran into Nathan in the course of just looking into, just out of a sense of, I suppose, journalistic curiosity about Andrew Tate. And I discovered Nathan, who goes by the YouTube handle Gadget. He lives in the southern suburbs of Adelaide. For a few years at that point, he'd been making videos essentially looking at the business practices and some of the comments that were being made by Andrew Tate and his brother, as well as business partner, Tristan. And the way he describes it is raise awareness about what exactly the effect that this was having on young men. And part of that as well was influenced by his interactions with young men. Nathan at the time was working in a management role where he had a lot of young men coming through, usually their first jobs, not a lot of life experience or qualifications necessarily, who were talking about Andrew Tate. And that was, like many people at the time, Nathan had probably heard his name mentioned in the news or just in passing online. When he heard the way some of his colleagues were talking about Tate, idolising him, really just talking him up to be the best thing since sliced bread, he decided to dig in a little bit deeper. And that's what essentially led him to the real world and scratching away at the surface and seeing what is actually happening behind the doors, so to speak. So he'd making YouTube videos just about gaming and technology and that sort of thing, and he pivoted. And now he dedicates much of his spare time to making videos about the influence of Andrew Tate on young men.
And so, I mean, there's a lot that, you know, is already really well known and established about Andrew Tate and his brother Tristan in terms of the fact that they do admit and almost boast about being misogynists, and that a lot of their content is really harmful to both young boys and women. But what were the things then that Nathan Pope was broadcasting about the Tate brothers that they thought really was defamatory?
So Nathan had been focusing and zeroing in on an online business that the Tates run called The Real World. It's essentially, in on the face of it, a self-improvement course. You pay $50 a month, you gain access to videos about entrepreneurship, about copywriting, marketing, exercise as well, working out and maintaining a good physical form. That's a big part of the image that the Tates present to the world. What he took particular issue with was the business model, and particularly that some of these guys being in there, I mean, we're talking about some users being as young as 12 or 13. They're not the great bulk, but they're certainly there. Saving up money, paying $50 a month for content that they could otherwise source elsewhere. And in particular, Nathan had been drawing attention to the emphasis on recruitment within the real world. So on top of working out every day, doing the courses, doing the online training, the Tates were asking their users to recruit, essentially. So to create anywhere from 3 to 6 videos a day to share on other social media platforms, drawing people into the real world.
How big is the real world, the membership base, I mean? Like, what kind of reach are we talking here?
So the Tates have said that there are about 250,000 active users. Whether there's no way to essentially corroborate that or to confirm that, but that's the number that they've put out there. The app itself was available on both the Google and the Apple stores. That was taken down in 2022, partially due to a lot of the campaigning and a lot of the emails that were being sent by Nathan, but also other social media and YouTube influencers who were pushing back against some of Tate's messaging. Tate's also been deplatformed from Meta, so Facebook, Instagram, as well as TikTok. But he remains on Twitter. If you put Andrew Tate's name to TikTok, it'll come up with dozens, if not hundreds of videos at any given time of videos made by users of the real world spruiking its benefits. And the focus really for Nathan is on the recruitment.
Can you give me a bit of a picture of what the videos look like? Obviously, we've got to be a little bit careful because Nathan Pope is accused of defamation, and so we can't repeat what could be potentially defamatory. But if you could just sort of paint a picture of what the videos that he's produced look like and how Andrew Tate features in them.
Well, the great bulk of them are made up of clips of Andrew speaking through the real world through his other streaming and social media platforms. So they're essentially montages of Tate speaking to his followers. A lot of the language in there, which we won't really go into, is quite misogynistic and or could be construed, I suppose, as misogynistic. At other times, it's really putting through or putting across that kind of playboy image. He's always, you know, wearing expensive sunglasses, smoking a nice cigar, gold chains around his neck, that sort of thing. And the comments that Nathan was making were essentially about his business model.
In this video, I'm going to show you a series of clips of Andrew Tate inside his online university, yelling and screaming at young boys to keep giving him money. Tate's so-called university is called the Real World,
and trying to draw people away from that, as well as some commentary about the other criminal proceedings that the Tates are currently part of in Romania.
Where are the Tate brothers right now? They do have these ongoing human trafficking charges that are being pursued in Romania. Is that what's going on there?
That's right. So they were running their part of their business operations out of Romania. And last year, they were charged by Romanian authorities with sex trafficking, alleging that they essentially kept women confined against their will in a sort of web, not only necessarily to help them produce their content, but also for the purposes of producing pornography via webcams. So they're currently in Romania. They're not allowed to leave the European Union. Awaiting for these charges to actually be prosecuted in a court, but that's essentially where they've been for the better part of last year, but at the same time, it hasn't really dented their their influence or their ability to operate by the looks of it.
Okay, but so coming back to Nathan Pope's criticism of the Tate brothers, their business model and their recruitment practices for the real world, what is Nathan Pope basing his criticism on?
So one of the points that Nathan made was about when if you do try to unsubscribe from the real world, some of the pre-recorded messages that the Tates will share with you to stop you from unsubscribing, saying, for example, you're taking away your only chance of success and replacing it with garbage. There's no excuse not to afford the real world if you've genuinely tried. $49 can't save you any other way. People who are honest with themselves are at my level, my echelon. So again, trying to create that distinction and that space between him and his followers. Saying, look in the mirror and say, oh, I've tried my best. If the answer is yes, you're an idiot and you should cancel your subscription. But the answer is ultimately no. So there's that kind of aggressive posturing, that very direct marketing, keeping in mind that we're not just talking about adults who are obviously free to spend their money however they like. There's a big section of this community that is under the age of 18 and quite impressionable and vulnerable.
Exactly. And the message is really clear just in the name, the real world, that there's sort of a promise or a sell of being a part of the world that Andrew Tate embodies, which is fast cars and luxury lifestyle, private planes and all the rest of it. And so he's clearly really strongly trying to perpetuate that idea that if you follow this business model, you'll be able to access that as well. So when did it become clear, though, to Nathan Pope that Andrew Tate had an issue with these videos?
So in March of last year, Nathan, as well as 14 other people who he keeps on and off contact with through social media, all being YouTubers or social media influencers, received a legal letter from on behalf of the Tate's lawyers, which was filed in a Florida court, effectively alleging that he, being Nathan, and the co-defendants were involved in a conspiracy to defame the Tate brothers through not only their comments about the real world and the sort of environment that it fosters, but also through some of these comments that I alluded to previously about the criminal proceedings in Romania. So Nathan himself didn't actually receive the legal letter himself. He was identified in the documents, as were a number of other people, as Jack Doe's or John Doe's, denoting a person, obviously, whose identity is unknown. It is worth making the point that at that stage, there was not only some reporting that I'd done, but also other outlets had done about Nathan and his work, very clearly associating him with that handle, Gadget. So even Nathan is at a bit of a mystery as to why he didn't receive this firsthand. But at any rate, that is now playing out. Through crowdfunding, Nathan and his co-defendants have raised about $42,000 to hire a lawyer to represent them in Florida. And that case is playing out as we speak.
So what can you tell us about the lawsuit and what the accusations are in it?
So it's a long document. It's about 60 pages, most of them being a statement of facts. And as you can appreciate, we're talking about 15 different people here, so there's a lot of granular detail. But to talk in general terms, firstly, the Tates are after $50,000. That's combined, not per defendant. They allege that they are the victims of an attempt by bad faith actors to discredit them and to essentially tarnish their image as hardworking business people, as family men, as people trying to help young men improve their lives.
Yeah, it's interesting the figure that they've put with this of, I think it's upwards of $50,000 damages sought. And damages in a defamation case is usually to compensate for lost income as a result of reputational damage. But these are men who are worth hundreds of millions of dollars. So, yeah, I'm curious as to how they arrived at that figure. But throughout all of this, it's hard to imagine how, you know, a humble Adelaide YouTuber would be feeling when someone as influential and rich and powerful as Andrew Tate and his brother are suing him. I mean, how has he coped and what's been his response throughout the past sort of several months of this lawsuit?
Well, I've kept in quite regular contact with Nathan. I think initially it was there was just a bit of surprise. I mean, he has around 18,000 followers. His videos get anywhere from 50,000 to 100,000 views. So he's certainly prominent, but not to the extent of some of his other co-defendants and not to the extent of some other people who are actively speaking out against Andrew Tate. And keeping in mind as well that he's, you know, lives a relatively modest lifestyle, he was certainly, I think, a little bit taken aback by this. But the impression that I get from him now is that he just wants to see this through to the end as a matter of principle, as I imagine the Tates want to as well.
He doesn't seem too threatened. I've noticed he's continued to post videos about Andrew Tate and commenting on this lawsuit since it since the action was launched last year. But tell me, where is it at the moment, and what did the judge have to say about this action?
So the Tates have encountered a bit of a hiccup earlier last month. So Nathan and his co-defendants, through their lawyer, lodged a motion to dismiss, saying that there was no jurisdiction and no reason for why this should be heard in a Florida court, other than the fact that some of the Tate's travel movements overlap with them being in Florida, where they're facing, separate to what's happening in Romania on those sex trafficking charges, some allegations of sexual misconduct in the United States as well. But the lawyer essentially argued that there was no reason why this should be heard in Florida. None of the defendants were based in Florida. There was nothing particularly about their content that was marketed towards that particular section of the country. And it's worth noting as well that the lawyer, through speaking to Nathan, who has in turn spoken to his lawyer, they can't really come to any other idea of why this could have been lodged in Florida. There's nothing necessarily more forgiving or permissive about Florida's defamation laws. And on top of that, there were also some other procedural matters relating to the fact that Nathan and some of his co-defendants weren't named directly and served papers. But essentially, the judge in Florida agreed with that and dismissed the suit. The Tates have now lodged an appeal, and Nathan and his co-defendants are now waiting to see the arguments of that appeal. And that's essentially where we are at the moment. It's just a matter of time until the judge once again reconsiders the case.
Right, so it's not over, but so far it looks like there need to be really significant changes in the way that this action is brought to have it go before a judge in Florida or potentially go to trial as a defamation suit. It just seems a little like a half-baked first attempt, though, to not even name the people that you're suing them or serve them papers. Am I missing something here, or is this a strategy?
I think that your guess is probably as good as anyone's, including mine. Having spoken to Nathan, he's very convinced that this is essentially a bit of performance by the Tates and a bit of posturing. I mean, these are two men with millions and millions of dollars in their bank accounts. $50,000 in damages is not going to really move the dial much for them at all. But in saying that, when you really listen to their videos and hear about the way they talk in themselves and their thinking about the world in relation to everyone else, the impression that you get is that they're essentially positioning themselves against a world that they describe as being too effeminate or too unmasculine, that sort of strips men of their inherent rights. There's a lot there, and I won't really, you know, go into it too much more. But regardless of whichever way this lawsuit goes, this is really going to have the effect of helping them push and promote their brand. So if they win, they're vindicated, and if they lose, then that's something that feeds into the picture of victimisation and the feeling of being wrong done by, sort of anti-establishment views, and picture of the world they essentially present is one where men are under attack. If people who might be familiar with some internet jargon might know the whole idea of The Matrix, the famous 90s movie, and the idea is that they want to help you escape the Matrix and see the world as it actually is, which is a sort of a Darwinian struggle for survival where women act on the behest of and should serve the needs of men.
Yep, I've seen the Matrix come up a lot in what I've gleaned in Andrew Tate's ex profile recently. Okay, so it's definitely not over yet, but so far it seems it's been a lot of posturing without, at least in the judge's view, sound legal basis for this lawsuit. And now we'll have to see whether they follow through with the appeal and whether or not they'll consider that worth it for them.
Yeah, that's essentially right. And they've been on the record as saying that they're happy to spend $1 million if it means just getting $1,000 back, because they want to make a point out of this and make what they call a principled stand. So that's where we are. And it's really just a question now of how the dice fall. And if on the chance that this is dismissed in Florida, it may be the case that the Tates decide to reorientate their legal strategy and file the lawsuit somewhere else.
Thank you, George. I'm curious to see where this leads and what comes next. Appreciate you for joining us on The Case Of, and really great to get your insight into this case.
Thanks, Claire. It's been a pleasure.
If you have any questions about this case or any of the cases we've covered, just drop us a line at thecaseof@abc.net.au. Later this week, Stocky will be back and reporting from Canberra, where the High Court will be delivering a decision which could overturn convictions of former New South Wales Labor ministers Eddie Obeid and Ian McDonald. One of them is still in prison, and this decision could see them walk free. High Court reporter Elizabeth Byrne will join Stocky to break down that decision, so make sure you're following The Case Of on ABC Listen so you get the episode as soon as it's dropped on Thursday afternoon. The Case Of is produced by ABC Audio Studios and ABC News. This episode was reported by George Yankovic and presented by me, Claire Rawlinson. Stephen Stockwell is our host. Our supervising producer is Greg Muller, and our executive producer is me, Claire Rawlinson. This episode was produced on the lands of the Wurundjeri and the Kaurna people.